standards for the Irish customs men. There was never any trouble with them. Our only trouble with Irish officials was with the taxmen, and their greed was driving us from Ireland. Courteous Swiss man came and greeted us and spoke a word to Mizgu and me. Company would like you to have dinner as their guests, he said politely to the family. Have had our dinner, and we would not leave our cats even that long. Say if there was anything he could do for us, and then he went away, leaving us alone. Ma said, shall we give the cats the tranquilizers? Yet, said the gov, and I am not giving Fief any, she is always quiet. We will see how goes when we get aboard, and that I am under a great handicap when I try to describe the next sequence of events. Asian, and at much inconvenience to herself, has agreed to write the next few pages. Well, there we were, sitting like a lot of creeps in the main hall at Shannon Airport. Crowds of people were sitting there like broody hens. Children were yelling their bad-tempered heads off and making mine ache with the clamor. Guys were sitting in a corner looking like a lot of stuffed ducks. Guils, because they had CD bags labeled for Paris, where the old woman cat came from. Airport clock was rusty or something, because time went slowly. Stup in blue and brass came over to us and almost kissed the dust on the ground as he told us that the Swiss flight from Shannon to New York International Airport was ready. Silly, because how was it a flight when it was still on the ground? To grab my basket, but the gov and the ma weren't having any. I've hoisted the old woman cat's basket and ma grabbed the one I had. Goodness only knows what she grabbed. I was too busy to look. Like a Sunday school party, across the floor of the main hall and out into the darkness that wasn't. It would have been, but every light in Shannon seemed to be shining. Were all kinds of colored lights. Other lights waved like fingers in the sky. And I looked forward and saw the plane. It was big, bigger than anything we had seen at Dublin Airport. It looked to me almost as big as Howth on wheels. Trailed along, getting closer and closer to that airplane, and it seemed to get bigger and bigger. At the front end there was a ladder thing with sides to it so that men on the ground could not see what we cats can always see. Women, I mean. The man carrying the old woman cat climbed slowly up that ladder or stairway or whatever they call it. Purser, my, I bet he ate well, so low he almost creaked. An even better fed stewardess dressed in navy blue and with a white collar greeted us. She did not bow. Her girdle prevented her. All stewardesses and hostesses wear girdles. I know that from a book the gov wrote some time ago. Anyhow, they got us all in the first class compartment, and then went to get the bread and butter passengers aboard. We quartered where the noise came from. To say we must not smoke, who ever heard of a cat smoking? Anyhow, must fasten our safety belts. The gov held onto his basket as if it were precious. Ma held onto mine knowing that I was, and the whole plane shook as if it would fall to pieces. It did not, but slowly moved along past a lot of lights. Outside waved their mouths open as they yelled. They looked just like fish we had had in a tank some time before. Rumbled on, making a horrid noise. Then when I thought we had driven nearly to America, the whole thing swiveled around, almost pitching me on my ear, and the noise increased. Pilot to stop it, but he could not hear me for all the noise he was making. There was a sudden sensation of violent speed, so suddenly that it almost mixed my lunch with my dinner, and then we were in the air. Have been inexperienced, because he turned the plane on its side and circled the airport to make sure that he really had left. All lights below me, hundreds of the things. Then I saw a lot of water glinting in the moonlight. Water down there, we shall drown if we fall in. He must have heard me because he put the plane the right way up and pointed the thing at America. Higher and higher, up through scattered clouds which were painted silver by the moonlight, up and higher yet. And higher, and I looked out of the window and saw flames shooting behind the wings. Golly, I said to myself, now they have failed to drown us, they are going to fry us. To the gov, and he told me it was okay, that's American for all right, and I should not worry. Some more, and saw some pipes in the engine were white hot. That way myself. Have got my thoughts, because he spoke from the ceiling and in his spiel said not to worry any. We always went up in flames, while gaining height. That stewardess came over. I missed what she said because I was so alarmed at the creaks when she bent. Her clothes will never stand it, I thought. Couple of silly Yanks lounged about in the first. What fat hunks they were. We were on our own. We got up to about 30,000 feet or so, near heaven I guess, and then the plane leveled out and we went sailing along by the stars. I'm going to give Ku a tablet, said Ma, slipping a noxious substance between my lips before I or the old man could object and swallowed. For moments nothing happened, then I felt a delicious lightheadedness stealing over me. The urge to sing was irresistible. Folks got madder and madder as I got happier and happier. Special note for cat fans, the old man made inquiries at Detroit Zoo later and found that cats are not tranquilized by tranquilizers. It just makes us drunk. Low at the Detroit Zoo said he had had the same experience as the gov with a drunken cat while it lasted there and will pass the task back to the old woman cat. After all, she started it and it is her pigeon. The plane roamed on, covering hundreds of miles each hour, dimmed and then finally replaced by a faint blue light. Lay in her basket, laughing softly to herself. After chuckle escaped her, at last I could bear it no longer. Curiosity overcame manners. Lee, so as not to disturb anyone, Miss Gu, what are you laughing about? Laughing to myself, Miss Gu really was lit up, as the humans say, state, and that had been her Tom who made a practice of going into a wine cellar and drinking up the wine droppings. Now Miss Gu was like it. She giggled, it's too good to keep to myself, Fief. Are you listening? Undid, certainly I am listening, I shall be delighted to hear your tale. She started, it happened just before you came to Houth. There's a Buddhist priest, or Lama, you know, on a rock by the side of the water one day, and a young Catholic monk who was on holiday with a whole party of them sat down by the gov. The gov was old enough to be his grandfather. To mass today, father, said the gov politely. I have not. You must go to mass, my son, said the young monk. Promise me that you will go today. Not promise you that, and you are not a good Christian, my son, angrily retorted the young monk. Lee, I am a Buddhist priest, an abbot actually, into peals of laughter. She said at last, Fief, you should have seen that young monk. He ran off as if the devil was after him. Even Miss Ku became tired of talking and laughing and fell asleep. His hand in and rubbed my chin. With a purr I dropped off to sleep. Ill when I awoke, the purser was bending over him giving him some drugs and ills. On the plane he had a heart attack and I did not really expect him to survive the journey. However, he said to me before we started out, if you can stand it, Fief, I can. That is a challenge to you. Special feeling, because he and I can talk together as easily as Miss Gu and I can. He don't. I sure have got a hangover. The vet face some of his tranquilizers so that he could know what they are like. What do human vets know about cats, anyhow? What time is it, please, Miss Gu? I'm all mixed up with the time. Anyhow, the blue light is off and the full lights are on. Chow time for them. Came aware of the clattering of dishes, and the small sounds that people make when they are waking up. Become almost used to blindness, but it was frustrating not to know what was going on, not to be able to see what was happening. To caress me, silly old woman cat, he said, what are you worrying about now? Wake up, it is breakfast time, and we shall very soon be landing. To crackling life, in your seat belts, please. We are landing at New York International Airport. Took firm hold of my basket. As of the plane dropped and the engine note changed of drifting, floating, then the engines came on at full power, a bump and a screech of tires, full bump, and the plane rumbled along the runway. Keep your seats, please, said the stewardess. Wait until the aircraft comes to a standstill. The occasional squeal of brakes as the pilot steered and checked our speed. Final drag and we slid to a standstill. The engine slowed and stopped. It was only the sound of people breathing. Then a loud bump came from outside, followed by the scraping of metal upon metal. A freezing air came in, said the stewardess. We hope to have you with us again on the landing ramp, with the gov carrying me, Ma carrying Miss Gu and Buttercup bringing up the rear. It was bitterly cold and I could not understand it. Brrr, Ku disgustedly, a hangover and now snow. Along so that we should not be out in the cold a moment longer than necessary. At a huge hall, who knew everything, said that it was the Immigration and Customs Hall and was the largest building of its type in the world. Used all our papers and we all passed through immigration and went on to customs. Afiga? Asked a man's voice. Nothing to declare, said the gov. We are in transit to Canada. Cats? Asked the customs man, with a drooly sigh. I've seen them before. Beautiful, Ston, By the difference in smell I knew that a colored man was carrying our cases, but the Gov and Ma still held on to me and Miss Gutshaw. The Gov sat down, because he was so ill, and Ma went off to see the American airline people who were going to fly us to Detroit. I came back, she was seething with annoyance. "Can their contract," she said, "they won't have the cats in the passenger compartment. They say they must be put in the luggage hold. It is something to do with their rules and regulations. They said that a mistake was made by the Shannon people." The old. I did not feel to survive in the luggage compartment. I had had too much of that, and I was shocked that anyone would expect Miss Koo to endure it. "If the cats can't go, we won't either. Go back and tell them we will make the biggest fuss ever, and she'll claim our money back as they agreed to take the cats with us if we paid in advance." I turned and said, "I have told them you are ill. They are having us sent to LaGuardia by special car. Lest we stay at the big motel there and then see if the airline will change their mind." A huge car, an immense Cadillac which even had air conditioning, headed our way through the intense New York freeway traffic. "I should not like to drive here." "It's all right if you keep in your own lane, Mom," said the driver. 20 minutes later we drew up at what Miss Gu told me was the biggest motel she had ever seen. "Went in. Object to having Siamese cats here?" "Welcome." At the reception desk, taking a good look at us. "Very welcome," he repeated, allotting us rooms. We carried miles along corridors before we reached our rooms. "Dee's room quick." Grateful for her remark. The facilities were speedily produced, and did much to contribute to our comfort and peace of mind. "See to the cats first," replied the Gov. Our routine had been very upset, but we felt that we could take it. The three rooms we had taken, and very cautiously investigating the corridor. "Guardia," Ma stood up, "well, to the airline and see what can be done." And Ms. Gu and I settled down to keep watch on the Gov. He had proved too much for his heart and he was flat upon a bed. Buttercup came in. "How will we get to Windsor if the airline will not take us?"
"Don't know, maybe by train," said the Gov. "We could have a sitting room on a train and the cats would be with us," he added.
I was dozing when Ma came back. "They won't take us unless the cats go in the luggage hold," she said. Both dreading that we should have to go in the luggage compartment. After all, we could not stay at the motel long. The prices were fantastic. "They could only suggest an air taxi," said Ma. "We funded from LaGuardia to Detroit as the airline broke its contract. Reduced the cost." "Did they say what it would cost to fly all of us from here to Canada?" Told him what they estimated it would cost and he almost collapsed with the shock. "So did Ms. Gu and I. A plane for tomorrow morning, but it must be big enough to have the cats in with us." Ma nodded her agreement and went out once more. I exercised by racing round the rooms and ran ahead of me. I followed her closely and we managed to have real fun and entertain the Gov at the same time. He loved to see us play and leap into the air. Gu led me to a window and told me about the tall towers of Manhattan among which the Gov had lived and worked some years before. Ma came back and told us that everything was fixed, and that we should be in Windsor, Canada, tomorrow at this time, tea, after which we sat and thought about the new land to which we were going. All went to our beds to get as much rest as possible. The trip from Howth had been even more tiring than we had anticipated. It was quite a pleasant motel, but very expensive, being so close to the airport and New York, but the Gov would never have been able to stand the journey without a rest. The man at the reception desk, he quite liked Miss Gu and me, which Miss Gu said showed good sense on his part, was ill, and because of our luggage, we had a car provided by the motel take us across the road and along to the office of the air taxi company. A very pleasant colored man drove us and went to considerable trouble making sure we reached the right office and got as close to it as we possibly could. "I'll wait here, sir," he said to the Gov, "until I sees you all is fixed up." No one seemed to know anything about us. A dim light appeared to glow in one man's mind and he reached for a telephone. "Shaw is coming over here now. Just wait there." We waited and then waited some more. Eventually a man swung impatiently into the office and said, "You the folks going to Canada?" We were, Miss Gu and I adding our voices to give emphasis.
"Okay, Jaboard, what about them cats?"
"They go in the plane with you, S. Firmly."
"Okay,"
said the pilot, "the two dames must sit in back with a basket on their knees," exclaimed Miss Gu in an awed voice. "It is nothing but a toy engines, three-seater plus pilot,
4 in all. We will undergarage even more fervor. I don't know how we are going to get the govs behind in that small front seat, roared. Even the pilot has had his head shaved in order to make more room. According to Miss Gu, had almost as much room inside as a small car, with room on the back seats for two average people. Ma is comfortably padded, Buttercup is slender, so they made two average people. Aboard at about 225 or 230 pounds. He may have lost a pound or two on the trip, and the plane tipped a bit. Wallace, pilot of the litter, because his weight apparently had no effect. He started up the engines one after the other, and let them warm up, then letting off his brakes he taxied slowly along. Miles on the ground, going to the far end of the airport. Who gave me a running commentary, she cried. All the aeroplanes in America are taking off from here. One a minute at least, uttered a very naughty word and violently swung the plane sideways and off the main runway. Flat, he growled. Pilot of that liner just radioed me. In the ear-splitting shriek of sirens and the roar of racing engines, a whole cavalcade of cars swung off the runway and surrounded us. My oh my, yelled Miss Gu above the noise. They have called out the National Guard. It cautiously over the bottom of the window, ears flat so that she would not be seen. Cops, a lot of cops out there, the fire brigade, and a carload of airport officials, and they have a breakdown truck as well. Grief. Commotion for one poor little flat tire. Men were running everywhere, sirens were emitting their last dying wails, and the sound of car engines mingled with that of airliners racing up before takeoff. And heavy thuds and heaves beneath us, and the plane was lifted inches off the ground so that the faulty wheel could be removed. Hissed away, then the breakdown truck dashed off with our offending wheel. An hour, 2 hours. We could have walked to Canada in the time. In utter disgust, leisurely the truck came ambling back along the service road flanking the runway. Leisurely, no, languidly. Men eased themselves out of the truck and strolled across to our plane. Eventually the wheel was fixed on again and the truck trickled off at his engines and let them warm. Talking into his microphone to the control tower, he said that he was ready to take off and was given, and he opened the two throttles, raced the plane down the runway, and eased it slowly into the air, keeping well below the airline routes. The pilot settled the plane on the correct bearing and put the throttles on cruising speed, but we did not seem to be getting anywhere. Speed are we doing, Miss Gu? Neck, looking over the pilot's shoulder. 25, altitude 6,000 feet, compass bearing northwest, replied Miss Gu. I envied her knowledge. Her ability to see could only sit, depending upon others to tell me things. Of all the flights I had made shut in a box, unconscious, this was far better. Now I was being treated better than humans, for I was sitting on Ma's lap. To 7, knock. We the parachute, thief. The fuel gauge is knocking against the stop. At petrol gauge wrong? He asked. Of gas, said the pilot, casually. We can always come down. Snow-covered tips of the Allegheny Mountains in Pennsylvania, who made chills of horror race up and down my spine as she told me of the gaping chasms and the razor-backed ridges just waiting to scrape us out of the sky. Consulted his map and made a slight alteration to our course. Ow! I exclaimed in fright. We are going down. Head calm, retorted Miss Gu calmly. Land and take on some petrol. There is a small airdrome just ahead of us. Now you just sink your claws in the basket and hang on. Bump. Went the plane. Bump, bump. It went again. It sideways a bit on the snow, and then rolled forward along the runway. In freezing air in. He yelled to a woman by the petrol pump, fill her up. He commanded as he dashed for the nearest comfort station and came over and poured a lot of petrol into the wings, not even glancing in our direction. Airdrome was shrouded in snow, covering the buildings and the runways. Scribed for me the numerous small planes shackled to the ground waiting for their owners to let them free to fly. All around the airdrome the snow-covered slopes of the mountain range lay in wait for the unwary. Stepped out onto the snowy wastes without a coat. Be careful, I called after him, you will catch a chill. Dope, thief, said Miss Gu, this freezing weather is a heatwave to what the gov is normally accustomed. In Tibet, where he comes from, the cold is so intense that even one's words freeze and fall to the ground. Winds roared again and we moved out across the rutted snow. No control tower here, in a little place like this, so the pilot warmed his engines, opened the throttles further and raced away down the white runway, circled the little airdrome until he had sufficient height, and then headed across the mountains in the direction of Cleveland. By now we had had thrumming engines for so long that we no longer noticed them flew, rising and falling gently to the vagrant currents, flying on endlessly into the fading afternoon. Smoke of Pittsburgh passed away beneath our left wingtip, the haze of Cleveland loomed up ahead. "We'll fly over Cleveland," said the pilot, "and cross Lake Erie from Sandusky, three islands beneath us in case of engine failure." To engines singing the same monotonous song, the pilot hunched over the controls with sitting so long. As the plane made a sudden turn to the right, "Great jumping tomcats," exclaimed Ms. Koo, "someone has upset the refrigerator and spilled all the ice cubes." He tittered in an embarrassed manner, and said, "It is not ice cubes really, although it looks so from this height. The whole lake is frozen and mountains of ice are piled everywhere." "They look like spilled ice cubes," she added self-consciously. "Ice grated and ground together, and any clear stretch of water instantly froze solid." "Said, was an exceptionally cold winter and the forecast was colder yet." "Pelly Island," said the pilot, "we are exactly halfway across the lake, over Kingsville and onto Windsor." The plane was pitching somewhat now, air being cooled by the ice caused some turbulence. "Tired and hungry, and I felt as if I had been traveling forever, desperately ill and old." "So could I." I squared my shoulders, settled myself more firmly and felt better. "Windsor Airport," said the pilot, "Smithscoot in high excitement. I can see the skyscrapers of Detroit and Interland." And the plane flattened out. Crunch on the snow-covered runway, and we were down, in Canada. The plane rolled gently along and turned right, left, left, said the Gov, who knew the airport well. "That is the disused airport. You have to go to the new one." Just then the control tower people spoke to the pilot on the radio and confirmed what the Gov had just told him. Did up his right engine to turn the plane, moved along perhaps a quarter of a mile, and then put on the brakes and switched off the engines. Ramped that we wondered if we would ever be able to get out, as white as the top of a Christmas cake. "Stuff come from?" The pilot pushed open a door and started to get out. "Bald, where ya born, folks?" Orcus yelling of the man shocked me and I wondered what sort of a place it was. "They all speak in that rough way here. They think they are still in the Wild West stage where courtesy and culture are considered sissy." The Gov replied that we were immigrants and we had all our papers in order. "After hours, immigration is closed," before turning away and entering the airport building. Tiffly, we got out of the plane and made for a door marked Canada Customs. Passing through, we found we were in a large, empty hall. I knew it was large and empty by the echoes which came back from our footfalls into a counter. Behind it. "Too late," he said, "you did not tell us that you were coming." "Immigration officer here now, I can't touch your stuff until you have been cleared by immigration." "Notified," said the pilot, "we notified you from LaGuardia, New York, yesterday. I have got to get back. Will you sign this paper for me? It is only clearance to say that I reported to Canada Customs." Had so much that his uniform creaked and strained. "Do this really," he said, "because I go off duty in a few minutes." However, pen scratched on paper, the pilot muttered thanks to the customs man and a goodbye folks, to us, and he was gone from our life. Eased up and died away in the distance. A door opened and closed. Ps came closer and closer. "Hey," said the customs man to his relief, "these folks say they are immigrants. We going to do? It is after hours." "Well, it is your problem. I'm off duty as of now." But another word and walked off. Leaf man spoke in a good old Irish voice. "Sure, and we'll get you cleared." An immigration officer to come from the tunnel and gave an outline of the troubles afflicting him. "Until he clears you as landed immigrants. Immigration first, then back to me at customs." "What have you got there?" "Two Siamese cats," replied the Gov. "Here are their papers, providing they are in good health." To the telephone. "Siamese." "Seen their papers?" "Yeah, only I thought maybe you would want to see them." "No, he came to us." "Cats can go through all right. Now we got to wait for you." "Are cleared, thief. But the family are stuck. Almost long enough to fly back." The airport was deathly dull, hardly a sound rippled the silence. Sicker and sicker. I wandered around restlessly, and Buttercup breathed as if she were on the verge of exhaustion and sleep. Somewhere a door slammed. Man, here he comes. Footsteps sounded along the corridor, two men walking. These folks claim they are immigrants, said the customs man. Will you because I cannot touch their stuff until you have cleared them. The immigration officer was a nice old man, but he did not appear to know the airport at all, nor did he know which office to enter. He kept asking the customs man things. Eventually he said, come this way, and walked off to a little side room. Start, we must have forms and things, he muttered to himself, tugging aimlessly at locked drawers to find some keys. Returned with the customs man, they went round trying drawers and closet doors, muttering to themselves as they found each one locked. Both men went out and we settled down to another long wait. Got the keys, the immigration man in great triumph. Now we shan't be long. For minutes he tried key after key, becoming more and more gloomy. None of them fitted. Off he rushed to solicit the aid of the customs man. Advanced on the offending desk. Up, said the immigration man, and I will bear down. If we can get this in between we can force it open. Moans and grunts almost lulled us to sleep. Then came the splintering of wood and the sound of a screw or two dropping to the floor from the shattered lock. Spoke, then the immigration man said, in a strangled voice, the desk is empty. He and the customs officer wandered round, experimentally poking and pulling at desks and closets. Immigration man exclaimed, ah, what it. There was the rustling of papers and muttered imprecations. Then a muffled voice said, now we have the forms, where are the rubber stamps? More searchings, more muttered words, more waiting, from which we were awakened by having our baskets lifted. Now you go back to customs, that is where you came in, said the immigration man, clattered back along the hall. Officer, lifting our papers now marked landed immigrant. Relieve the gov lifted cases and put them on the counter, unlocked them and opened them for inspection. Cases. And glanced through our effects. Lately, coldest winter for a long time, an airport cleaner told us. Lately our cases were stowed in a waiting car. Ma, Buttercup, Miss Goo and I got in the back. Sat in the front with the driver. Off we went along the slippery road. Did not seem to be at all sure of the way and kept muttering to himself, we turn here. No, it is further on. No, it must be here. To us it seemed almost far enough for an air journey. He jolted along a terribly bad road and swerved uncertainly to a stop. Here it is, said the car driver, this is the house, and carried our cases in. We're really too tired to carry out a thorough inspection, so we tottered round trying to note the most important points. I'll sound asleep. Miss Koo came and awakened me, saying, come on, you lazy old wretch, and had a good scratch in order to wake myself up. A comfort station is a wall against which you would dash your brains if you had any. Note its position, for I shall not repeat myself, she went on. Here is a door. It leads to a small garden with a garage at the end and the road beyond that. She led me through the house and jumped onto a window ledge in the gov's bedroom and porch outside, and then a big lawn and beyond that the sea. He called, moving to the other door. Opening it, he carried me through. And Miss Koo rushed past to be out first. It's not the sea, said the gov. It is Lake Street Clare, and when the weather is warmer you can both go out and play on the grass. Range kind of house, a grating in the ceiling of each downstairs room allowed hot air to go to the room above. Put on a grating, and watch what was going on in the kitchen below. She got extra heat from that rising from the kitchen stove, but it had the great attraction of enabling her to know all that was going on in the kitchen. Tradesmen at the door, and what was being said in the gov's bedroom. Arrived in Canada, it was Christmas to no one at all, and during the whole of what was for others the festivities we saw no other person, nor spoke to anyone. The weather was bitter, with constant snowfalls, and the surface of the lake was a solid sheet of ice upon which ice yachts sped. I thought of the other years and of other Christmases. Lake, and Noel had meant much to her. I had been shut up in that dark old shed. Shut up for the whole of the day after, too. I had forgotten all about me. Was truly the happiest ever, because I could look back along the years and know that now I was truly wanted, and know that no longer would I be lonely or forgotten, or hungry. In my me, hidden as much as possible. For even a few minutes someone says, where is Fief? Search is immediately instituted. Keep in sight, or make my presence known as soon as my name is mentioned. Two is regular. The gov says I eat one meal a day. all day. He does not believe in feeding animals just once a day. He thinks that we have sense enough to know when we have had enough food and drink available, day and night.